Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next couple of hours, you're kind of stuck with me. Hopefully, you'll stick around, and we'll do this together. If you'd like to join us, you can, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us. The lines are wide open. And I have my co-pilot here today.
Am I off probation now?
Yes, yes, you're off.
You always try to fire me, so I figure I'd just stay away for a while.
I think it has to do with the Saturday morning garage sales and stuff.
Oh,
and the estate sales.
Working, stuff like that.
You call that working now?
No, not garage selling is not working, but sometimes I do work on Saturdays.
All right. This is my wife, Renee. We've been together for 172 years, or at least it feels that way. We've been in business since 1979 together. Mm-hmm. And she, it's regularly said, and everybody knows, that if at the shop, if someone needs a hug, you give them the hug. And if someone needs their butts chewed, that's left to me.
Yep.
So you're the hugger and I'm the spanker, kind of?
When we're there. We're not there much anymore.
I know, but the kids have just kind of taken those roles up to some extent anyway.
That's right.
Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. That's the line to get in. If you'd like to join us, you certainly can. You have a car question? Okay, here's something that's wadded up my underwear.
Yep.
Okay.
I've been looking at some car ads or some repair site ads.
You're right. These are things that bother me.
Okay.
Because I'll explain why, and you can tell me if you think I'm right or wrong. First of all, they recruit the most highly trained technicians, and they only use one name brand part.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know how that's possible.
I don't either. I asked Jeff about that, our parts guy,
mm-hmm.
and I said, could we just use like one brand ABC oil filters, fan belts, starters, alternators? And he said, you need to stop smoking grass, is what he said to me. Now, of course, I never have, but the idea is we use, and they drop the name of a very well-known, well-respected automotive electrical parts component.
Okay.
Okay. So, and then they talk about that they keep engines healthy with a focus on preventative maintenance. That wads up my underwear something fierce. Because your engine health has everything to do with the oil light and the overheat light. We don't replace engines that wear out. We replace engines that people drove another mile with the red light on saying you're overheating or you're low in oil.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that we've ever added a mile to anybody's car because we over-maintained the car.
Right.
That we changed the oil at 2,000 instead of 3,000 or we did this or we did that. That's just not the whole idea. But I think you'll agree that if we talk about and we throw out a big name brand out there that's a real everybody knows, mm-hmm. and say we only use their parts, that may create a perception of confidence that doesn't exist.
Sure.
And then the idea about preventative maintenance solving all your problems, nothing could be further from the truth.
Right.
It's true that if you don't maintain your car, you'll pay for it. But what's really true is there's a whole lot of things that no one can preventatively know about.
Sure.
So when your alternator fails, no one knows when it's going to fail. When your battery fails, when your starter fails, when your water pump starts leaking, when your valve covers leak, when your rear main seal leaks, all that kind of stuff. There's no amount of preventative maintenance that's going to make that not happen.
Right.
It's just all there is to it. My underwear kind of wound it up about this.
And not going to replace your starter just to replace your starter because you got 10,000 miles on it or whatever.
And that's a really good point because it is true that we get carts that come back quickly to us.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the warranty's for.
Right.
So why would you replace a starter that's working or why would you replace a battery that's 2 years old or 3 years old? Why would you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Now, if you have the signs, a good example is the battery, or it's kind of a rid-d-d-d-d-d, that's morning.
Okay.
And then you all of a sudden you hear ruh, ruh, rid-d-d-d-d-d-d-d. That's the beginning of the end.
Sure.
So you now know that.
Right.
Okay. I'm just going to continue. They recruit only the highest trained technicians. We recruit all the time.
Right.
We're constantly looking to improve our field of technicians. I don't know how many we have right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have probably 10 people on the floor out there.
Yeah.
And we use ASE. That's a certification given to technicians. And I don't know how many masters we have. I'm a master.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie's a master. And a whole bunch of them are masters.
Right.
And master means you've done all 8 of the automotive tests and you've passed them, and then you have to recertify every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the standard in our industry. And so they recruit only the most highly trained technicians. But he doesn't describe the highly trained.
Right.
Does he recruit only ASE masters?
Right.
Because there's trained guys that come from different facilities that have a brand on them, like Bridgestone Tires or Firestone or those kinds of places.
Or Nissan technicians.
Exactly.
Some of the specific dealers train technicians, but
yeah.
they don't train them in all vehicles. It's just one brand, maybe.
And it is true that if you understand spark, fuel, emission, tailpipe, and you understand all that, you can pretty much apply that to any car out there that has a spark plug.
Mm-hmm.
You can apply a lot of that kind of stuff. But to suggest that we have only the very best and the highest, highly trained technicians is something that we can't brag about. We've got a good staff,
mm-hmm.
and we can fix things really well.
Right.
But I can't brag about that I have the best and the highly trained. I can't do that. It's just not possible. Their techs are trained to repair transmissions, replace tires, service brakes, and here is the part that just gets me. Their certified technicians perform a 22-point inspection with any service and examining the car's supply of vital fluids in making maintenance recommendations. What's the number one most lucrative thing that we do with respect to fluids in cars? Flush and change them.
Right.
It's lucrative for us.
Yeah.
It's low risk because there's really no risk associated. You're going to drain something and you're going to fill it back up and you might replace the filter.
Right.
So when you start talking about all that kind of stuff, you're talking about stuff. So all of a sudden, I would be ashamed if the kids decided to put a 22-point inspection on every car, because
right.
I think that's a shopping spree.
Absolutely.
I think it's nothing but a shopping spree.
It is.
It's allowing us to find something we can add to your ticket, mm-hmm. and convince you that this is something that you have to have, and the owner's manual doesn't play a part in that, and you know how I believe the owner manual is written for your car. I believe you should follow it. I believe there should be a reason that you deviate from it. I'll give you an example. If your car's consuming oil and you're adding oil on a regular basis, you if your car manual says change it at 3,000, and if you're adding 2 quarts in that 3,000, then why don't you just keep using it? Because you're adding 2 fresh quarts to it all the time.
Right.
So just you keep using it. Don't you can change the filter. You can do whatever you want. But there's just certain things about that. But how many people have we seen that brought in a car that was using 2 quarts and 3,000 miles? It's going to smoke like crazy.
Rarely, yeah, rarely.
And then they talk about all repairs have a 36-month, 36,000-mile warranty, and they also have three different links for financing.
Wow.
So if you need something big, click on these links, and we've arranged these companies to provide financing to fix your car.
Wow. So they're selling like crazy.
And if you can't afford it, they have
in-house
financing available for you.
Wow. And we already know, because we've already seen so many people come in and say, oh, they told me I need to change the transmission fluid. And the owner's manual might say 100,000 miles, and they're wanting to do it at 30.
Right.
You know,
it's
because
a tough call.
We live in Arizona or whatever it is.
It's always an excuse.
Right.
It's we live in Arizona is the best one.
Mm-hmm.
That manual's not written for Arizona.
Right.
It doesn't say it was written for Ohio.
Right.
And it doesn't say it was written for the rest of the states. That manual goes with the car wherever it lives.
Sure.
If you want to speed it up, go ahead and let it be your idea, but mm-hmm. not the shop's idea, because it's very lucrative if we start messing around with the manual.
Mm-hmm.
There was something else in here that they talked about that was something that was... Oh, remember it was the clean pistons?
Oh, yeah. It will keep your pistons clean.
Clean, yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Never heard that before.
Yeah. It keeps engines healthy with a focus on preventative maintenance, do a 22-point inspection, examine the vital fluids, replace tires, service brakes, as well as change oil to keep the pistons clean. That is probably the dumbest sentence I've ever heard. First of all, you've been with me. We've been side by side since 1979.
Right.
We have 38,000 customers plus.
Mm-hmm.
We have hundreds and thousands of makes and model cars in our database. Have you ever seen a work order that said that we said that they need to have their pistons cleaned? Or have you ever seen a service writer write down, you need to have your pistons cleaned?
Never.
Never.
Can you even do that without taking the motor apart? I don't know.
No, you can.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you, but don't tell anybody else.
Okay.
Okay. Water.
Yeah.
Carbon is like glass.
Okay.
And you know when you take a hot glass and you throw it in cold water, it'll shatter?
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, in the old days when we had much higher compression engines, if you wanted to just clean the top of your pistons, you would bring the idle up fast. You go, and then you would introduce liquid water to it, about letting half of a straw drain into the engine.
Okay.
And the water would virtually turn to steam when it got into that hot engine, because mm-hmm. the engine temperature is over 220 or 212, and it would shatter the carbon.
Okay. Well,
we used to be really proud, but we didn't have the ability to take the spark plug out like we do today and put a camera inside there.
Oh, okay.
So, but we also say, well, the customers say, well, nothing come out of the tailpipe. Oh, the muffler catches it. All that was crazy. All that was nuts.
Uh-huh.
So to have to clean the top of your pistons is not, it's a false sense of security.
Okay.
But this, I'm just citing some of the things I found in different places in the marketing strategies of some shops.
Mm-hmm.
And I just say to people, this is not benefit you, it benefits them.
Right.
This is all about selling you. And right now, we have cars out there, you'll agree, mm-hmm. that we don't really have to do anything for the first 100,000 miles except change the oil.
Exactly.
And rotate the tires.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the oil change, we're supposed to check the fluids, the belts, the hoses, the tires, and look at the battery to make sure it's not corroded and crank it over. That's what we're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
We're just supposed to try to make sure that you'll make it to the next oil change.
Sure.
And if you have a 10,000-mile oil change and you drive 10,000 miles a year, then we're going to see you annually.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is if we only see you annually and you don't come in 5 times for an oil change a year, you only come in 1 time for an oil change every year, we lose 4 chances to sell you something.
Mm-hmm.
Windshield wiper blades, belts and hoses, nitrogen for your tires, which is another crazy thing that wads up my underwear, all that kind of stuff. So because we've lost basically 3/5 of our work.
Right.
Because now we don't get to change the oil every 3,000 miles. Unless, of course, if we tell everybody that those oils are great oils, but there's just no way you should go 10 to 15,000 miles. Mm-hmm. You really need to change that oil every 3,000 miles. Well, if it's a $150 oil change or even higher than that, that's pretty lucrative for us, too.
Yeah.
So bring in your car every 3,000 or 5,000 miles. Let us do a synthetic oil change on it. And then we have all that time to just look your car over and sell you all kinds of stuff. And we have a crystal ball, and that's part of what we do, is because we can look into the future.
Sure.
602-508-0960. Now, one other thing. If the show goes bad today,
okay,
I want to place the responsibility squarely on the shoulders of the person it belongs. Okay? If something happens bad, it usually has to do with my timing and stuff.
Yeah.
But
like
in
now?
This, yeah, like
when
right now.
A minute late.
I'm running late on this break, but I want to draw the distinction that Gil, who's been with me for 11 years,
yeah,
is on vacation.
Okay.
And we have somebody, I think his name's Jeremy, and I think he's in, and so if there's any mistakes, then they really do belong to Jeremy, because I haven't made a mistake in years.
Oh, okay.
And Jeremy also does the open, and he'll play that for us at the next break or something,
yeah,
like that. He actually created it,
yep,
and then he voiced it,
yep,
and that's been the most popular thing on our radio when people really remember that thing. But anyway, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and people have said that about me for a long time.
Yeah.
It's I've been around the block. I've been in the car repair business. Well, I started as a gas station in 1968,
mm-hmm,
and so we opened up our own shop in 1979.
Yep.
We've done our fair share of service. We've been in the Tempe area, and this show has nothing to do with my shop. That's why, even why I maybe twice a year I say the name of it. But in reality, it just has not. It has to do with helping you understand the industry that I'm in. One of the other things that we have that I see on the internet a lot is, and I'll read you this from another website, you should have your vehicle inspected at repair shop. Their technicians provide a comprehensive list of issues to help describe what your vehicle needs. I suggest that your owner's manual describes what your vehicle's needs. And the owner's manual doesn't have anything about flushing the injectors and doing all the fancy stuff and using special chemicals in your engine. It has none of that. So go on. This way we're able to keep you informed of what your vehicle could face in the future. Are they suggesting that they have a crystal ball and can say tell what happens in the future?
Sounds like it.
This way we're able to keep your vehicle in good condition for many years to come. It's not uncommon to see well-maintained modern vehicles with 200,000 miles or more. It's their goal to keep your vehicle running for as long as possible, saving you money and providing financial stability. I know. It's just tough to hear. 200,000 miles means every motor that we replace is because it's been overheated dramatically and destroyed, or it's been run low on oil.
Uh-huh.
Rarely do we see them where they're smoking so bad. I mean, maybe one a year we see that just it's embarrassing to drive it.
Right.
So the customer says, you know, what do I do? Put another motor in it, or do I fix the one I have? Mm-hmm. But to suggest that we're going to be able to do different stuff to make you, help you understand and keep your vehicle and look into the future more than anything else. Let's go ahead. And then another thing they've got here is they talk about in special stuff. They say we clean the entirety of the transmission, replace the fluid, and add premium conditioners to extend the life of your transmission. I disagree with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
We can either change a portion of your transmission fluid. Pretend you have 8 quarts. You have more, but for math reasons, you have 8 quarts. We're going to pull the oil pan, and that has 4 quarts. And we're going to replace the filter and the 4 quarts, and we're going to put you back on the road like that. That's what we've done for 150 years. That's what we're supposed to be doing. In their particular case, they're talking about flushing the transmission. Mm-hmm. Now, there are times when someone misses some services and the fluid gets really yucky, and a flush is the appropriate thing. We will then hook up, according to them, they have a special equipment that cleans the entirety of the transmission. Okay. We do too, and so does everybody else in town.
Right.
But there's a time to use that and a time not to use that. But to use that and then add special conditioners, that gives you confidence in knowing that we're going to extend the life of your transmission. The only way that you can destroy a transmission, hurt it, or make it better is your right foot. Mm-hmm. It's how you drive your car. If your transmission is shifting hard and you're accelerating hard, and every time you accelerate it goes da-da-da, 1, 2, 3, that's it. It's okay. That's my truck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's my truck. But if Grandma Moses has a hot cup of coffee sitting on her knee and she drives, she's not going to spill the coffee and she's not going to need all those additives.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is I'm telling you, I don't sell additives. I don't see a reason. I'm also an oil expert, and I can tell you that Chevron and Valvoline and Quaker State and all the big oil companies will tell you this. You don't need anything but our oil. Our transmission fluid, our power steering fluid. You don't need any of that hocus pocus magic lotion stuff. I can buy that stuff for $1 a pint and sell it to you for $12.95 a pint. Do the math.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things that we have a tough time with.
Yeah.
A good shop in town is Automotive Dynamics there in Sun City. And they've been around a long time. I've known Chuck since the late 70s and early 80s. His son Derek runs Automotive Dynamics on Grand Avenue just west of 99th Avenue, and he's a good shop. But they also have a place called, what's it called? OPS.
Okay.
Other People's Stuff.
Yeah.
You have to be careful here now. And so I'm going to tell you about this. It's Other People's Stuff, OPS. And what happens is Mark and Renee have an RV and they want to sell it. So we're going to rent a spot on their lot.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to go look at all the RVs there, but you're going to deal with Renee and I.
Okay.
They're not involved.
Mm-hmm.
So all they're doing is they're bringing a whole bunch of used, privately owned coaches and motorhomes and trailers and boats to a large parking lot.
Right.
A facility.
Sure.
And people go there and negotiate with the owner.
Yeah.
Of it. So there's no commissions. There's no nothing. The person with the RV actually pays a fee to rent the spot for a month.
Okay.
And so they have 30, 60, 90 day terms and stuff like that. But the people, which is Nite family, mm-hmm. that owns the operation, mm-hmm. they're not selling anything.
Oh.
They're selling real estate to market your coach, your right. motorhome, your trailer, your boat, to a variety of people. So they get quite a few. I guess they're getting some pretty good crowds because it's like the park and swap of
right.
stuff.
And people don't have to come to your house to look at it. You have a place that you can go.
Compare.
Neutral place, yeah, and compare and look and see what's out there.
Exactly. So now I thought, I laughed and I said, other people's OPS, other people's, mm-hmm. and he goes, nope. He says, everybody makes that mistake.
Yeah.
And he says, but the last word of that is stuff.
Stuff, okay.
Stuff. And so other people's stuff.
So don't try to change it, Mark.
I'm not changing it. Yeah. I'm not changing it. So that's, now another good shop in town is Strictly Diesel, Nate. Nate knows as much about diesels as any five people that I know. He is just a very nice, very intelligent, not in your face kind of guy. He's as tall as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He's got hands like tennis rackets, but he's the kindest, nicest guy you've ever seen. So he's up in North Phoenix. He's, he's at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. He's been around a very long time. He, oh, 3, 4, 5 years ago, he moved from North Scottsdale up to I-17 and Pinnacle Peak because he found that there was a significant amount of diesels up there and his customers were already driving to Scottsdale.
Okay.
So he went to Pinnacle Peak and I-17, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. If you got a diesel question nobody can answer, I promise you, Nate can. And who we got on the air, or who we got on the phone, Jeremy?
All clear right now.
Oh, I thought I heard a... Did I hear...
You're hearing things.
Yeah, but he's telling me that I'm up against a break.
There you go.
That was what that
air
gun
was. You can't be late this time.
Oh, I'm not
You've already
gonna.
Made two mistakes.
I know.
I'm counting today.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. See, folks, right now it's 45, 46, 47 seconds after 29 minutes, and I have to break in exactly 9 seconds. So I'm supposed to walk it right up to the 9-second mark, and I will. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem and with my wife, Renee, here sitting with me. We've been in business in the auto repair industry since 1979. We worked for Mobil, and then in 1985 or so, we opened up our own repair shop. Mm-hmm. And then we've been in our existing facility since 1994.
Right.
And so we have serviced our fair share of cars. And we don't subscribe to a lot of the different ways to bring people in. I think we treat everybody the same in this respect. It's what's good for them, not what's really good for us.
And there's too many good shops around the valley to send them all the way down there.
Yeah. And that's, let me describe what you're saying. What you're saying is that the reason why we don't tell you the name of our shops is we'll guide you to a shop that's geographically close to you. Mm-hmm. That's what serves you better. You're in front of us, so it's not important about us. This isn't about me thumping my chest for 2 hours telling you I'm the greatest shop in the world and try to increase my sales, when in reality we're blessed beyond belief and we take by appointment only, which is something we had to do just because we were swamped.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a
difficult
thing.
That's why you started the best car repair shops and did people all around the valley that you know are good and trustworthy and will take care of the customer.
And you can get that at MarkSalem.com. MarkSalem.com, the best car repair shops. And I'll give you another one real quick, Thompson's Auto Repairs in Mesa. The Thompsons is run by Brian and Thelma, and both of their families had gas stations in the 60s and the 70s. Those kids have been around gasoline pumps. They've been around oil changes. They've heard the same kind of talk at the dinner table their whole lives. So it's the only shop in Mesa that I can recommend. It doesn't mean it's the only shop in Mesa that's good, but he has to pass a certain muster, and he did that with ease. Some of the shops haven't been in business long enough.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps maybe their reviews aren't that great. On and on. But right now, the only shop I can send you to in Mesa is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Jim, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark and Renee. Have a lot of issues related to a 03 Ford Expedition 5-plank 4-liter engine.
Okay.
It would lose power and then stall. And I would let it sit for maybe a minute, and I would be able to start it and then drive. Happened a couple times. Took it to a garage I've dealt with in the past. They diagnosed it. The diagnosis was I needed a fuel pump.
Okay.
So I gave them $800. They put in a new fuel pump. Same problem. So I have a couple of questions. One is your assessment of what should have been done. And two, did they do the proper diagnosis? Should they have been looking at other issues along with the fuel pump? Because now I have a feeling that I bought a fuel pump that I didn't need.
Yeah. Okay, first of all, I'm going to stick up for the shop first, and then I'm going to address the thing. We won't know who's really kind of made a mistake here until we fix it. And then when we fix it, when you get it fixed, you will have that opportunity to make that decision yourself. You're likely to hear that, oh, you had, you know, X amount of miles and it needed a fuel pump anyway. Here's what industry standards dictate under these kinds of circumstances. In these kinds of circumstances, when you come in, we know that that motor's going to fall on its face for one of three reasons. It's going to have an ignition problem. So we're dropping the crankshaft sensor. We've got the ignition module. We're overheating the distributor. We got a lot. So we're losing spark, okay? So you lose spark. It still cranks over fine, but it doesn't catch, doesn't run. The second thing would be the fuel. So the fuel pump itself dies, the pressure substandard, we no longer can push fuel forward, and you die, and it cranks just fine, but it doesn't start. And then the exhaust, we've got a catalytic converter that's plugged up, we've got half the muffler, half the catalytic converter biscuit is in the muffler, which is behind it, we've got a plugged exhaust system, and intermittently everything rearranges itself to plug off the exhaust and you run out of power. I think most of the shops in town that have they've got gray hair on their eyebrows and on their head, if you're a customer, we're going to just plug in a fuel pressure gauge and we're going to send your butt down the road and we're going to tape it probably to the outside of the windshield or bring it into the cab and we're going to say, look here, turn the key on, boom, 50 pounds, 60 pounds of pressure. Start it up. 50, 60 pounds of pressure. Throttle it up real hard. Whoppa, whoppa, whoppa. 50, 60 pounds of pressure. And we're going to show you all the different things. And then we're going to go drive it. And we're going to get on the entrance ramp of the I-10. It's Sunday morning. There's nobody there. Of course, nobody's open working on cars on Sunday morning. Slam the throttle to the floor. You'll see it goes from 50 down to 40, maybe 35. And then it pounces right back up because the fuel pressure regulator saw the pressure drop to a substandard. And it closed the gate to build new pressure. That's what should have really happened. How many miles are on your Expedition?
140,000.
Okay. Maybe they looked at the odometer. Maybe they said to you, have you ever done a fuel pump? And did they say that to you? And what was your answer?
Didn't say that to me, no.
Okay.
And it's a situation. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's okay. If that's the original fuel pump and that was a part of the conversation and you got 140,000 miles on, which is six times around the equator, I may have participated in that discussion in this respect. You know, that's probably the best guess is that fuel pump. You've never had one. You've owned it since it was new. You've never had one. And that's probably where we should start. But before that, it's okay for us to say, hey, Jim, we're going to put a fuel pressure gauge and you're going to have it for a couple of days. You got to make it happen. But, you know, we're going to charge you $20 or $30 for a couple of days for the rental on our gauge. And that's kind of what happens. So if they would have done the gauge, then you would know it's not the fuel pump. I'm not quite sure. I'm not going to stick up for the shop, but I'm not quite sure you want to fight the battle of put my old fuel pump back in. Because you're better off with a new fuel pump replacing one that's 140,000 mile old. But I think what you probably have is you probably have an ignition malfunction in the FICM, which is an ignition control module, in a coil, in a crankshaft sensor, something like that. Do you have any check engine lights on at all?
No.
Okay. All right. And it sometimes the computer has to see a repetitiousness of the complaint and the defect before it will set the check engine light. Now, the other possibility is that this has a fuel pressure regulator, and the fuel pressure regulator is bad, and you can replace the pump until we're all dead, and you're not going to make that vehicle run any better. Now, after it dies, let me ask you another question here. After it dies, What do you, can you walk away and come back in an hour and it starts right up?
Walk away and come back in 90 seconds and it'll restart.
And it cranks over just fine. It doesn't catch.
No.
Okay.
Correct.
I think this is how, you know what, I'm going to take a break. You stay right there. I'm going to put my words together. I'm going to do it out loud as if I was you standing in front of even my own shop. And I'll give you some suggestions on how to do that. So you stay right there. The lines are open at 602-508-0960. We have four lines available. If you have a car question, now's the time to call in. So it's 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to go back and we're going to talk to Jim. Jim, my wife, and let me explain, she is a Salem girl as opposed to the Salem boys, and my daughter's there as well, and she said, he never did answer your question. And I said, what question was that?
But you didn't really ask him. You said, did you talk about that? But we don't know. Have you ever replaced the fuel pump in the 140,000 miles?
No. I bought the car used, so
okay.
I don't know.
So
about
you're not
what,
sure.
Yeah, what mileage did you buy it used?
I bought it used at 123.
Okay. It's my bet would be that that's the original pump, and he would have known when he took it out. I mean, there's different signs there that you're the first one into the tank and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think you'll find out the temperament of the shop, but what I'm hoping the shop's going to do is to say, I understand. Let us do some more diagnostics, and you can say, now, is that on my dime or your dime? And I think they might say it'll be on our dime. And they may come up with a plan B, and there are ways for us to hook up different devices into your car and have you watch the crankshaft sensor and have you watch some of the issues for us. And when it dies, you'll know what it cranks over and catches. You'll know what the pattern looks like. And it might be a bunch of, like a heartbeat kind of pattern. And then when it dies and you hit the key and it's a straight line pattern, that means we've lost the crankshaft sensor on a temporary basis.
Okay.
So,
May I just make another statement? I'm not blaming the shop. I like the people there. But one thing that is, obvious to me and also the service manager, they're woefully, I would say, woefully short of human resources. They just don't have enough people. And I have a feeling it's like, that's why I have a feeling they didn't do a real complete diagnosis. But maybe they did. I don't know. The car's back at the shop, and it's like, guys, do the best you can, and then after the problem is solved, we'll sort this out as who owes who what and what the problem was.
Oh, now, is that what he said?
No.
Well, that's what I noticed. And when I threw out a statement to see how he would react, it's like, Jim, you know, it's like, I'm going to put my hair on fire and run up and down the hallways. This is so bad. I mean, they're really short of people.
Okay. I like that. Because I think what he's saying is we could have made a mistake putting the pump in, and we could have made a mistake misdiagnosing it. My first thing, and I like this a lot. Mm-hmm. I like him. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get it fixed, and we're going to get it to go a week or 2 weeks or a month without dying and stalling. And then you and I are going to sit down like men we are, and we're going to work it out. That's how. If that's the gist, I say stay there, don't move. That's the kind of shop that I think is the one that you want to work with.
Okay. May I say something? I don't want to take up a lot of your time,
no.
But may I say something else?
Go.
I dropped the car off, we'll say, 2 weeks ago. They had it for 2 days and didn't do anything. So I said, Rob, I need the car back. I'm going to have to, I could drive it. I'll do the best I can. So I drove it for a week, same situation. They've now had the car for another 2 days. And I don't know what they've done. I told him I dropped you off on Wednesday afternoon. I told Rob I'm going to need it back by Monday afternoon. And my thought is if they haven't solved the problem by Monday afternoon, I'm just going to take it elsewhere.
And it's okay for you to be nice and butt in. It's okay. You say to him, you know, I was talking to my brother in Milwaukee, and his best friend owns a shop, and he says, hey, why don't they just plug in a fuel pressure gauge on there and tape it to the outside of the front windshield and let Jim monitor his own fuel pressure? And then you say, hey, Rob, is that something that we can accomplish together? I mean, I don't know why. But so far it sounds pretty good. I got to run, Jim. Harry, you're up next. Harry, how the heck are you?
How you doing, Mark?
I'm better than the average bear, but I'm having to make...
I've got the good bear with you. Keeping you in line.
Yeah, exactly.
Not happy about that, Harry. She announced it 17 minutes before the show that she was going to sit co-pilot with me. And so, you know, I don't
Harry,
know.
He begged me to be
here. Who do I believe?
Yeah.
I know who you believe in. Anyway, what's up?
Hey, I got a couple questions for you.
Okay.
You were talking, one is, have you ever used water alcohol injection systems, you know, in the past on maybe your tractor or some high performance engines?
Yes.
And how did they work out for you?
Well, first of all, we use water to try to control a carbon buildup. If there's so much carbon in the cylinder that it raises the compression ratio, then we have pinging and pre-ignition, and we have other drivability problems like rough idle and stuff, and we have spark plugs that get all carboned up. So water injection is a good way to help eliminate some of that carbon. There's other chemicals as well. The alcohol is just a vehicle to get the water in there, because alcohol absorbs water. So if you put alcohol and water together, then it's easier. You can't put liquid water into a cylinder because we have to compress that. And water doesn't compress. That's how we bend rods and stuff. So you have to have a pressurized delivery system and water and alcohol, or just water or alcohol to combine. And alcohol has a flammability to it, so it's similar to gas in where it has an explosive capability to it. But the answer is yes. Then the next question, Harry, is, Mark, how many times are you dealing with carbon as a problem in the combustion chamber at your shop? And my answer is once every 5 years. If I'm going to guess, it's going to be that far apart.
Well, this is probably older vehicles. I'd use that particular system on some air-cooled VW cars I had in the past.
Yep.
A little more performance and keep, you know, pinging down, stuff like that. So I'm just wondering if you'd use them.
No, you're right, and the alcohol cools the combustion chamber, which eliminates pre-ignition. Otherwise, the fuel is ignited before we wanted to ignite it. So with water and alcohol injection, we're going to drop the temperatures, and we're going to eliminate a lot of the explosion before we want the explosion. But you're right, Harry. You're right.
Right.
You're talking about the 50s and 60s and 70s is what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm kind of from that era. So.
Yeah.
We all
and the
are.
Other question, the other question I have is on, you were talking about additives and cleaning and stuff like that. With a lot of the newer vehicles with this direct injection and stuff on the intake valve, not getting you know, oil cleaned off and stuff. My understanding is they're using some sort of cleaners that they inject into the vehicles when they show symptoms of a carbon buildup on the intake. How well is that working out?
That's working really well. First of all, let's get this straight. We're talking about less than 1% of the cars on the road. Okay, this direct injection idea. They're few and far between. This isn't a Chevrolet Impala or a Ford Crown Vic or a Ford Edge or an Escape. This isn't a popular car. So yes, the answer is there is a variety of ways to deliver chemicals to the back of the intake valve to clean up the mess made by a change on where and when we spray the gas. And so instead of spraying gas, we used to spray the gas behind the valve, and then when the valve would open, the gas would be sucked into the cylinder, and boom, we'd have an explosion. Today, they decided that we're going to inject the gas where the spark plug is similar to the spark plug, and that has created a whole new problem that nobody expected. But it's not a big deal, but yes, the chemicals are working rather good.
And you know what? He said something good, is we use chemicals, but for symptoms, and I feel like the other people were talking about, let's just add chemicals.
You're right.
No reason.
Right. You're right.
You know, so. Well,
see, but don't tell Harry that, honey, because that's
why?
Exactly what the Kurtz tells him. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah, your car's going to love you more, Harry, if you spend $199 spraying this special fog. Yeah, that's why your car loves you. You're exactly right.
My Ford loves me.
That's it.
Thank you, Harry. Thank you very much. Going to move to Marty. Marty, thanks for holding. How can I help you?
I'm listener. I was the guy with the Dodge van that had the gas tank leak, and it's all been repaired. I have a gasoline question for you.
Sure.
Before I got gray hair and old, I remember seeing tanker trucks going to the gas stations that had their logos on them, like Union 76, Exxon Mobil. Now they're all generic tanker trucks, and I'm also wondering how they can do the various octanes out of one truck unless they're running three bladders. And my final question is, how come we don't have gas wars anymore? Everybody has the same gasoline prices because it's coming out of the same pipe.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I'm going to hang up and listen on the radio because there's no follow-up question, and I know you're running short of time, but I enjoy your show.
Thank you. Well, first of all, let me tell you the story about the mobile. In the 1970s and early 80s, Renee and I owned a gas station, and we had a big gasoline shortage, and they were bringing gasoline from the West Coast, and so they were bringing them on tankways trucks. And so the guy pulls in, and he has compartments so we can order different amounts of regular and super.
Right.
Okay?
I remember that.
And it had to add up to 9,000 gallons.
Right.
So you could do a 3 and a 6 or something like that. 3 of super and 6 of unleaded. So he has compartments, and he can dump that. So he dumps 9,000 gallons of unleaded into our tank. And I said to him, this is a true story. Mm-hmm. I said to him, hey, whose gas is that?
Yeah.
Where'd you get that gas? And he goes, watch. And he pulls a 5-gallon white pail out of his truck, and it has like plastic on the top of it. And it's 2/3 full with this white liquid. He goes over and he dumps it into my 12,000 gallon unleaded tank, and he goes, now you got mobile.
Yeah. That's
a true story. The reason why they don't have a Chevron and all that, because pretty much the gas is the same.
Yeah.
There's a drop of detergent in every 100 gallons of gas, and I'm exaggerating slightly, I'm drawing a picture with my words. And so let me change your question one more time. Mark, do you hunt down a specific kind of gas? Hell no. Mark, where do you get your diesel fuel and your gasoline at the cheapest? Why don't we have gas wars anymore? Because I have an app on my phone, times 10 apps, that tells me the cheapest gasoline within a country mile of where I'm at 100% of the time.
And everybody's making too much money. They don't care. They want it the highest they can be. So it's crazy.
And you're right. Even in Payson up here, there's a 15-cent difference between the cheapest diesel and the most expensive diesel.
Yeah.
And I'll drive clear up to the Home Depot to save 15 cents a gallon because I have it on my app.
Right.
So I don't hunt the name brand. I don't care. I'm looking for price. And of course, they're making a heck of a lot of money on fuel right now at the prices that it is. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's okay. I'm not going to begrudge them. They have an investment. But yeah, you've got all these independent guys out there hauling fuel, and they're doing a better job. And then the big oil companies don't have to service the trucks and replace the tires and all that other kind of stuff. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we have 5 lines. Jeremy's the one that's running the show. And we'll be back in about 3 or 4 minutes, maybe 5. You can wait, 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. She's Renee Salem. We've both been working on cars since 1979, and we'll give you the best information and guidance we can. And you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And Curtis, I'm going to get to you in just a second. You're our first caller. Anybody else? We have 4 lines available. We talk about cars. We're talking about car repair. We're talking about some of the pitfalls of dealing with a shop. And when the real question is what we're talking about benefit you or benefit me? I'm the driver. You're the shop. And unfortunately, there's a whole lot going on where it just benefits the shop. I represent a large group of shops in the Valley. We're all friends. We're all gray-haired guys. All of us have been around the block a lot, and we've all come to the conclusion in various stages of our lives that if you just do a good job fixing people's cars and giving them good advice about stuff that they need in the future, and don't use scare tactics, then you're probably going to have more business than you know what to do with. And that's basically what where many of us have evolved to. The idea of hiring a technician and having him rip every car apart that goes into his bay and give him a laundry list of things that needs to be done tells you where he came from. It doesn't tell you that he's good. He's a salesman, and his job is to generate sales. And many of the cases of shops in the Valley area that I know of, generating sales is the last thing we want to do. We're so doggone busy, we don't even know what to do. And sometimes we even actually, I think my wife Renee is sitting here with me, there's times where we just shut down to new customers, period, because we can't handle the volume.
Yeah, we've done that in the past. But and all the trade magazines, I mean, it's about how you can improve your profit and sell, every single thing. It's just, it's really sad.
And what she's talking about there is we probably get between 5 and 10 magazines free of charge mm-hmm. that are talking to the independent auto repair shops. And in those magazines, it's page after page on how to increase your sales, how to increase your profitability, how to make more money on your labor, how to make more money on your parts. And should you use an elevated scale? Should you buy something for a dollar and sell it for $1.25? Or should you double the dollar and get 100% profit? But on the big stuff, you can't buy something for $1,000 and sell it for $2,000. Mm-hmm. So then they teach you and they give you all these matrices on what you can do.
Yeah.
And there's just too many of us old guys out there with gray hair that just don't have time for that. Curtis, thank you for holding. How can I help you this morning? Curtis?
Listen to you every Saturday.
Thank you. Thank you.
The CRV 2016, 140,000 miles, and I had a little air conditioning problem, and they put new antifreeze in it, and then they put this stuff in it, this chemical in it, and I don't know exactly what it's called, but it's called like freeze. And it's supposed to make it colder.
Yeah.
What do you think? And somebody told me not to put that in, that it'll cause corrosion, has chemicals in it.
Okay. It is my opinion. It is my opinion that this is, first of all, we all know that you just can't put anything in an air conditioning system. You better put something that resembles, smells like, tastes like, and is boxed like, and put in the right cans of Freon. It has to be Freon. We have to, your air conditioning system has a sophisticated system that takes a liquid and turns it to a vapor, and then takes the vapor and turns it back to a liquid, and then we start this big circle. Liquid, vapor, liquid, vapor, liquid, vapor. It's a big circle. So what, in my opinion, this can of magic potion.
I thought he said antifreeze, though. Was it antifreeze or...
I think he meant Freon.
You're breaking up.
I put it in my antifreeze, or with my antifreeze, yeah.
Okay, this is
I'm sorry. No, this is my air conditioner.
Okay, all right.
So Freon.
Yeah, it's Freon.
Okay.
Okay, they do sell Freon that has some magic potion in it, and it's a special concoction made by a tribe in Africa and that was from the 1400s, the new Christopher Columbus, and they found this bean underneath this particular rock that you could smash up and put in your Freon, and it would add 3 degrees to the center vent temperature of your car. I think that's what we're talking about.
Oh my goodness,
Curtis.
Yes, that's on Scottsdale.
It's a Honda dealership, and I'm going to tell them to take it out and put new Freon in it.
And you know, you can. We have the ability to suck out the Freon. We have the ability to clean it up. We have the ability to make it virgin and remove the moisture. And we have the ability to put back in. You're going to get some pushback on this, so this is what I want you to do as plan B, okay? I want you to issue me a warranty on this system because you've put something in there that's not approved by Honda, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, I want you to give me the sheet on this. I want you to take a picture of the can so I know what you put in there. Okay. So I want a picture of the can. I want the bit, the spec sheet of the product you put on, because that's easy enough for us to get.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to write down exactly what the warranty is, because I don't want some, because on the internet, Herbert, the Google expert, said that that stuff could be corrosive and cause damage. Now, it is true that all we put in there is Freon. If you add anything else to the air conditioning system, it's not designed to be there. So I don't know what they put in, but I'll bet it was a can of Freon with some wallpaper on the can. I'm just guessing here.
Yeah.
And underneath it is a regular Freon, and they made another $1.50 to $5 on you because they told you it was special from their Frigidaire company.
I just may bring it into your shop and have you guys do it.
Well, here's the problem.
We don't know what it is.
Yeah.
We can't take it out.
We can't deal with it. Because, see...
Well, you can drain antifreeze, can't you? And put in brand new antifreeze?
In your cooling system, in your radiator, yes, but not in your air conditioning. That's called Freon. And our machines are, if somebody puts some contamination in there and we suck the Freon out, clean it up and put it back in, we wipe out a machine, it's $5,000. That's the reason why most of us that have those machines, if you can't say that we did this, then you have to go back to where you came.
Yeah.
Because some people put
that stop leak Freon in there, and that just
destroys
wipes out our machines.
Destroys the machines. So, it's okay. I would go back nice and say, I'm unhappy with you putting something other than what should belong in it. I would like you to remove everything from my air conditioning system and fill it back up with Freon that is supposed to be in there. Thank you very much. That's what I think you should do. I got to run, Curtis. Jeremy, next.
Sean Scottsdale.
Sean in Scottsdale. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, I got a couple quick questions for you.
Sure.
So I got the 2013 Chevy Silverado 1500. It's the V6 or whatever, but it has on the computer system on the dash, it has the relearn tire positions, and I've always kind of wondered what that is.
Oh, okay. I can answer that for you. That's easy. There are four transmitters that are inside the tire on the back side of the valve stem, and those transmitters talk to an antenna in the truck. And that way, when the light comes on and says your right rear tire's low, then the right rear tire's low. Here's what happens.
You take it to the
garage, and you tell them to rotate the tires. So the right rear ends up on the right front. Okay? Now, no one told the computer that we rotated the tires. Now, when the right front goes low, it's going to report it as the right rear is low. Does that make sense?
No, totally.
And so...
My second question... I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I'll tell you who can fix this for you for free, okay? On Discount Tire. This is something they deal with all the time. I'm proud to be a partner with them. I do work for them in the legal arena. But to be honest with you, they know how to do it. You go in and you say, would you please verify that my car knows where each tire is at? And they can do that for you.
Okay, great. And then one other thing, I have an aftermarket stereo system on here, and I have an aftermarket, I have a backup camera that I put on here,
uh-huh.
Just a couple other things that I've tapped into aftermarket-wise, and, I have the amplifier and the subs and all that. Well, my previous battery that I had on here just kind of gave out on me every time. I would start, run the car, it would say battery low. And so I went and purchased a new battery, and I made sure to tell the guys at AutoZone or wherever I went that I needed, a larger battery because I have all these different aftermarket things pulling from this battery. And now I think it's been probably about 6 months since I purchased this battery, and the battery that I purchased, I was told, was, large enough or a little bit larger than the previous one that I had and would be sufficient. Well, now about 6 months into this, I think the other day I might have been in the garage when it was hot and listening to the music with the car not running, and it said, hey, please start your vehicle battery running low. And so I did and everything, and it hasn't died yet. But since that happened in the garage with the battery running low that one time, I'm now having issues where when I turn the music up, it's like cutting out because I don't think I'm getting enough power.
Okay, so okay, stop. It's okay.
Yeah.
You've got a bad water leak in your front yard and you're trying to stop the water leak at where the leak is at, you need to go upstream. You need to go have somebody check the electrical system out. Is the alternator putting out full bore? Does it have, if, is your battery fully charged at 12.8 to 13 volts? And then when we turn on the alternator and we fake it out with our equipment, does the alternator go up to 13 or 14 or even 15 volts? And if it's an 80 amp alternator, is it putting out 80 amps? So you need to have somebody go check the rest of the electrical system. You can, and it's the CCA rating on the battery is all you need. So if you've got a 500 CCA rating and you want something bigger, get it 850 or 1,000 or something like that. Cold cranking amps, CCA. That's the number. So you don't have to count on some three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store to tell you how he's going to give you a bigger battery, because he's going to give you a bigger battery that's physically bigger, that's 1 inch longer, 1 inch wider, and 1 inch taller. In reality, what you're looking for is a big CCA. And I'm not, stop. Yeah. I'm up against the clock here. The idea that your truck is telling you that there's a problem would indicate to me that we have a draw on the system, or we have an alternator that's substandard in its ability to provide voltage and amperage. And an electrical systems check, give me a range.
$40, $45, $50.
Okay, we're talking about, and then we're going to open it up. $30 to $60. Okay. Most everybody's going to be in the $30 to $60 range for an electrical systems analysis. But that's what's really going to need to be done. And I'll bet you he's plugged into some systems that are on all the time, and he doesn't even know that.
Right. And that's what I was going to say. He needs to have the stuff checked that he had put in, because they might have not have wired it correctly.
And it's probably off the ignition, and it's off of a hot lead, and it really needs to be off of the key. Mm-hmm. So we need an ignition feed to fire up all the big music stuff.
Right.
And so, and that's probably what it is. It's just a matter of somebody installed it and tagged into the wrong circuit, and that's what it's about. So the electrical systems tech will tell you we got a problem, but then you're going to have to pay to have somebody find it, find the connection, and put it where it really belongs. And most of the time, you always end up on the fuse panel. You're going to be on the fuse panel or somewhere close to the fuse panel when you start putting in all the speakers and the woofers and the thumpers and the jumpers and all that other kind of stuff that you've got. Even if you've got neon lights, that happens too. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. So welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and with me today is my wife, Renee. We've been in the car repair business since 1979, and right now our two children, our oldest kids, Alan and Andy, run our operation.
Oldest and youngest.
And we're kind of half-retired. I still got some horses that I mess around with a little bit, which gives me hobbies, and then Renee has her hobbies, but I still love doing the show, and I'm still deeply involved in the car repair aspect, and so I'm still somewhat educated about what I'm talking about. Yep. Let's go to the phones. Bob, you're up.
Hi, Mark.
Thanks. Hi.
I've got a 2008 Subaru Outback, non-turbo, four-cylinder, horizontal opposed. This has been an intermittent problem for, a year and a half. The check engine light and the cruise control light will come on and flash. And doesn't seem to really affect. I only noticed a slight hesitation in acceleration from a dead stop. Other than that, it runs great. Then it will just suddenly turn off. Everything's fine. The thing has tons of power, 120,000 miles. I went to do my emissions this year. It failed the first time because it was flashing. It indicated on their computer that it was a number one cylinder missed. So I took it back. I told him about the problem. He said, bring it back. The second it stops doing it, and it passed perfectly.
Okay. All right. I can't fix your car over the radio. And the fact that it's flashing means it's happening right then and there. And there's a whole different story about emissions and monitors and backups and behind the scenes and all that kind of stuff. But I understand completely why they couldn't test it. And those are the rules we live with. In your particular case, you're going to have somebody.
Oh, no, he tested. He tested it.
And I understand. No, please, please. I understand what you're saying. Let's get to the question. The question is have you fixed it?
No, I've gone for a year and a half to my normal mechanic. They cannot pull up codes. I'm guessing from just my past experience with normal vehicles than all these new electronic ones, it could be somewhere in the computer. It could be a coil pack.
Okay.
It could be a plug wire.
Okay. Okay. All right.
The case can't seem.
Okay. Listen to what you said. I've gone to this guy and he doesn't have the equipment to talk to the car. And if you want to go replace the computer, go ahead, but you'll be one of about 10,000 people who are going to change a computer and not one of them fixed the problem. And get on the internet and go to Mr. Google and talk to him and they'll tell you to replace the PCM, replace the ignition module, replace this, replace that. Why don't we just fix the problem? And so that's available. If I were you, I'd call a couple of import parts stores, and I would say to them, who buys lots of Subaru parts, and who can find and fix this problem? You're going to spend somewhere between $85 and $150, my guess, to have somebody diagnose the problem. Then they're going to call you with an estimate. Then you're going to say to them, you're going to say, I don't want to have this problem again. I'm not guessing. I don't want you to guess with my money. I want you to fix the problem. Are you sure that you've got the problem under control and evidently it's related to cylinder number one? And that's the kind of conversation you should have. But you and I can sit here and discuss this until my next birthday. We're not going to get anywhere. I understand what happened at the emissions control station. It has nothing to do with fixing the car. I understand that they have the equipment to talk to the car. So does a whole lot of the rest of us. So you just have to go to that shop. If your shop doesn't have the equipment, then he can't do it. So go someplace else. Talk to him and have him suggest somebody in your neighborhood. But the easiest way is go to the auto parts store and find out who buys Subaru parts. So that's the easiest way to do it. Bob, good luck to you, buddy. Your Outback is not even a 1% of the cars on the road. And so there's not a lot of people that have the experience necessary to fix it. But the good news is those of us that understand how the system works, it's finding it and fixing it is not easy and it's not hard. It just depends. But it's certainly possible. Tony, you're up next. How can I help you?
Oh, thanks, Mark. I do want to get your thoughts on a couple of things because I do want my truck to love me more.
Okay.
I have a 99.73 diesel, and I wanted to pick your brain on fuel additives because of the low sulfur and lack of lubricity on an older truck like that. What do you think?
I wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't do it,
no,
huh?
No, I have a $35,000 engine in my big Volvo. It's an M11, and I'm not doing that with that. And my motor costs a whole lot of money, and if there was a risk associated with it, if I needed to put camel urine inside my tank, I'd be doing it. But to answer your question, I wouldn't be using any fuel additives. I mean, if you want to, because you want to and it makes you feel better, then go right ahead. You're not going to hurt anything. But the diesel fuels of today have all the additives that we need from the oldest to the newest. So
okay, so we're covered there. Then the last question I have is, after a long, heavy, hard pull, say on the interstate, and you pull immediately into a truck stop, how long do you let your diesel idle down to cool a turbo?
Well, I'm blessed because I have an exhaust gas temperature gauge, EGT.
Yep.
And do you have one?
No, I do not. It's completely stock, non-chip.
Okay. When I'm really running and gunning, and I'm hauling horses, and I'm going up the hill, I'm running somewhere between 12 and 1,500 degrees on the turbo side, okay? When I pull up to a traffic light, in the time of the traffic light, my temperature will come down to 200 or 300. So my answer to you is no matter how hard you flog that, no matter how many young kids you're racing, no matter how much you're pulling, if you pull into there and you say the Lord's Prayer twice, that's enough time to let it cool off and shut it off.
That's all I need to know. Thank you for your input.
All right. You
betcha. Enjoy your show.
Thank you. Thank you, Tony. All righty. there's some shops in town that are all really, really good shops, and I'm going to name a few of them for you right now. Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway, northeast quadrant of the valley area, in that northeast section of Scottsdale and stuff. There's lots of shops up there, but Blackwell's really good. He knows what he's doing. He works on vintage cars as well as new cars. He understands the fundamentals. He's a real principal character. Him and I are a lot alike. We're cut from the same cloth. He knows right from wrong, and he knows BS when he gets it from the people that are working in the shop. And him, like many other shop owners, have already instilled to our staff that BS&S isn't going to work because we weren't born yesterday. So if you're up in the northeast quadrant of Scottsdale, Blackwell Automotive is a great place to go. Another place to go that's really, really good is Kurtz Auto Repair at I-17 and Bell Road. Kurtz has been around a long time. I can't tell you how many times I've sent a caller, a consumer, to Kurt and have him fix a car that nobody else could. So he's really my go-to guy when it comes to the Central Phoenix area and when it comes to I've got a problem nobody else can fix than Kurt. But he also does oil changes and cooling system flushes, and he does all the maintenance necessary to keep your car in order. But they're just great diagnosticians. So Blackwell in the northeast and Kurt's Auto, I-17 and Bell, I've got you covered in those two different directions. And on the other side of the break, we'll give you a couple of other places that you can go to that I personally recommend, and they really, really are the best around. And I'll tell you something else.
What?
On the other side of town, 38th okay. Avenue and Indian School, is Larry Harker's Auto. Been around since 1967. I don't think you were even born then, were you?
No, I wasn't.
Yeah. Larry Harker's, again, it's a full-blown shop that has oil changes all the way to the most sophisticated, but what they're really good at is tracking down stuff that other people can't or other shops struggle with. They are really, really good at finding and fixing the problem. Now, really, really good goes hand in hand with not really, really cheap. Not really, really expensive either. A fair price for a fair job, but they have the skills and the technical ability and the equipment necessary to track it down. The real quick story is that somebody had got an estimate because water was blowing out of the vents on the passenger side of a very expensive European car. And the repair bill was $4,000. Well, the second opinion went over to Harker's. They found the condensation drain behind the glove box plugged. And so the water that was being created by the cold air conditioning wasn't draining on the road. We've all seen that as you walk away from your car. So they unplugged the drain. They cleaned out the box. And I think the bill was $125, which was probably an hour's worth of time. Yep. And they fixed it.
Yeah.
That's quite different than $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 to go in there and replace it. Now they would have fixed it for the $4,000 bill because once they got in there,
sure.
They'd have seen it.
Yeah, but would they have said, "Oh, this is all it was," instead of the $4,000? I'm not sure.
You're exactly right. We don't know. Yeah. All right, let's go to Scott. Or no, we're going to go to Tony first. Did we already talk to Tony?
Yes, we did.
So all right,
Scott. We did. Yeah.
And Scott, you're up next. What can we do for you? And what we're going to do is tell us your make and model, and then tell us the problem.
Okay. Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir, I can.
Yeah, I got a 1962 GMC pickup truck, long bed, three-quarter ton.
Okay.
And what I'm doing is I bought this rolling chassis without a cab, and I'm going to make a utility trailer out of the bed.
Okay.
I noticed that when I was backing it in, the driveway, I saw both tires left some rubber marks on the driveway, so I jacked up the rear end. I spun one tire, and the other tire went with it, and forward and reverse. So I ended up just jamming a piece of lumber underneath one tire to see if it was a limited slip. One would free spin, and the other one, you know what I mean.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But it just locked up. It would not.
Okay.
It felt like a full locker. So.
Okay.
And if I'm not mistaken, it's a Spicer.
Okay. Wait a minute. Let me ask some questions.
Okay.
Sure. Is this got a tongue on it? Have you already built the trailer and it's
yeah.
already? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Has it got a bed on it, or is it just the frame?
No, it's got a bed on it. It's okay. The original bed.
Okay. All I would probably do is you got a differential, and I would probably, it's probably got a, if it's the older differential, it's got a drain plug on the bottom of it. Just drain it or suck it out and put clean fluid in it and go drive that thing down the freeway and make sure that both tires are the same diameter and make sure they have the same inflation. And I'll bet you after about 5 miles, that differential will start slipping for you.
Okay. And, you know, and that was my another question. Back years ago, all these hot rodders would sit there and they would weld the spider gears to make it a true locker.
Yes.
I didn't know if through your travels, if you ever known of a Spicer in that particular year being a full locker or not.
Was it, when you locked up the rear end, then every time the car made a left turn, it went and it would chirp the tires and the car, whole car would hop like an idiot. And
that's
so
what this does.
Okay, I know, but I'm from the era you're talking about, and you only, I mean, one guy in the neighborhood welded up his spiders, and everybody learned from him. It was a bad thing to do. Just go get a posi rear end. Drop in a posi in your housing and be done with it. Yours has probably been sitting around a long time, and probably everything is just stuck, and my advice to you hasn't changed. Drain the fluid, put some new fluid in it, and I'd put some weight in the back of it, and I'd just go take it down the freeway, and I'd go 5 miles north and 5 miles south, and then I'd go behind Safeway or Bash's, and I'd make some figure eights with it, and I'll bet you dollars to donuts the thing unlocks, and you'll be fine.
Oh, fantastic.
That's what I do.
News.
Okay. All right. Good luck to you, Scott. Thank you very much. And speaking of transmissions and differentials, then we have to talk about automatic transmission exchange. Phil knows Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble. He's been around since cars had tires of stone.
You too, huh? He's like you.
Just like me. And Phil's been around automatic transmission exchange at 40th Street in Washington since 1968. Now, those guys learned the fundamentals of the early automatic transmissions, which we shift things with pressure and vacuum and speed and clutches. Well, guess what? We still do that, except we use electronics to do it today. So we have an electronic solenoid that makes this arm go left or right, first gear or second gear, in a simplistic way. So if you have a transmission problem, automatic transmission exchange is my favorite place to go. Been around, like I said, since 1968, 40th Street in Washington. And if you live in Central Phoenix and you go east and west along Washington, it's important you'll know what we're talking about because it's been there forever and it has a big transmission out on the street. So automatic transmission exchange, a great place to go. I'm going to take a break because Jeremy's sleeping, and he's not expecting me to hit an early break this time.
Right, yeah.
And so when
Why
we come,
would he? He's been late on all the others.
I have been. It's been a tough day for Mark. Anyway, 602-508-0960. That's the lines, and we have five open, and Jeremy will answer. And don't get mad at Jeremy because he'll just hang up on you. He's just that kind of a guy. But nevertheless, Jeremy and Gil are the two people that have trained Mark and Renee since 2011 when we came to KKNT. And they are, without a doubt, two of the best board operators, best engineers that I have ever been around since I started my radio career in 1988. So when you get Jeremy to sit wing with you, to sit next in the seat next to you, or you get Gil, which I usually have, you can't go wrong. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. Okie dokie, 43 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, and between now and the top of the hour, we're going to be talking about cars. We have four lines open. We've got one that's taken right now, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. Jeremy will answer the call. He'll get your name, and we'll get you on the air as quickly as we can, 602-508-0960. I want to tell you about Action Auto Repair, but more important, when you go to MarkSalem.com and you look at my best car repair shops, I want you to pay attention that I'm not fishing for new shops. I'm not advertising that you can apply. You see, I pick the shops. I pick the shops where I know the owners. I've known the owners for years and years. Action Auto is owned by Tom, and I've known Tom since 1983. Him and I have been friends. I have his cell phone. I know his wife. I know his kids. And if Tom has a problem, he can call me, and I have a problem, and he's pretty good on some Beamer cars, I call him. So that's how it works. So if you're at I-17 in Deer Valley and you're looking for a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that's served Deer Valley and the North Phoenix area since 1983, then maybe you should try Action Auto Repair. They have ASE-certified technicians. They get the job done right. And I'll tell you, as an owner, Tom knows right from wrong, left and right, up and down. So he's not going to listen to some brand-new technician try to feed him a line of you-know-what to explain why he accidentally put diesel fuel in the fuel tank. So they know right from wrong. It's a good place, Action Auto Repair. Let's go to the phones, and let's go with Steve. Steve, good morning. What's up?
Good morning. I have a 2004 Mazda Tribute. Okay. Just had the air compressor replaced after 17 years. Got it back. It's working good. Just realized now I'm noticing that the fan speed on the air conditioner is varying. Like when I take off, it'll slow down a little bit. When I put the windows up, it'll kind of slow down a little bit and then kick back in. I just wonder if it might be something that didn't get hooked up or if that has anything to do with it.
Okay.
Just noticed it started happening after the repair.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. I'm not quite sure. You're giving me symptoms I've heard before with two separate issues. And so the fan speed should never change. But I think what what you might be hearing is the engine RPM change as the compressor cycles on and off. Is that possible?
That's not possible. I thought about that as well, but I did notice putting the fan on high that it does drop down the volume of air coming out, drops a little bit, then momentarily kicks back up again.
Yeah. All right, well, let me just explain what I know for sure. When we freeze up the evaporator behind the glove box, oftentimes we shut the compressor off. And when we do, there is a surge in RPM, and sometimes it's interpreted as a fan speed surge. So there is nothing that should control the fan speed other than the switch. So you should pick 1, 2, 3, or 4, and it should stay there and should blow all the time because the fan speed has nothing to do whatsoever with anything to do with the air conditioning. It blows on the condenser, on the evaporator, and it doesn't know if the heater core is on or if the evaporator is full of Freon. So I'm a little confused about the fan speed changing speeds. Do you have an automatic part of your air conditioning controls?
Automatic, what do you mean? It's a 2004. It's just got the red and the hot, and you put this to the hot or the cold, blue, red or blue.
Okay, that's temperature. That's your temperature slide or your temperature knob. On your fan speed, does it say 1, 2, 3, 4, or does it say auto? Or does it
1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay. When you're in speed 4, we're just sending battery power directly to the blower motor, so you're getting full 12 volts plus, because the alternator is going to take the 12 to 13. So you get 13 volts to the high blower motor, or to the blower motor. But on 1, 2, and 3, we're going to run that voltage through a resistor. I'm going to regurgitate what I think you're saying here. You're driving down the road, and you've picked fan speed 3. And for some reason or another, since you've had the air conditioning worked on, the speed of the fan that's blowing air out the vents into your face is changing, although you haven't changed the speed from 2 where it was or 3 where it was or wherever, right?
Correct. And it only seems to happen when there's a load. Like when I take off from a light, it'll do it. When I was putting up the windows, the fan would kind of go down a little bit. But when it's just driving constant, it's kind of fine. Only when I kind of, you know.
Okay.
If that makes sense, if that helps.
What speed are you running the fan on?
I was running it on 3, and it was still doing it, and then I put it on 4 just so I could to verify that it was actually the volume coming out, and it would do it like when I would take off from a light. You know, just don't jackrabbit start, but just take off. I pushed up the two power window things both at the same time, and it kind of lulled the air coming out.
You know, I guess at first blush I would say to myself, It sounds as though that we're having a wider variation of voltage in the entire car. I don't want to see less than 12.5, and I sure don't want to see more than 14 at the battery.
Right.
And so the only thing that could cause the fan speed to change, I was looking for, like, if you had automatic temperature control, then it looks at a lot of different sensors before it turns on the fan speed, and it's not uncommon for the fan speed to go higher and lower intermittently for no reason, right, other than the, but you're also talking about an 04 Tribute that's 16 years old, 17 years old. Right. And so I think what I would want to do is if I was assigned to fix this car or to look at it, the first thing I'd do is do an electrical systems analysis. Let's see what the alternator puts out. Let's see if I've got 13.2 volts at idle and without the air conditioning. Let's see what the voltage goes when I turn on the air conditioning and when I put it on the fan. And let's see if we're bouncing or if we're dropping below the thresholds or going above the thresholds on the top end. And then I would exercise all of that electrical system. And I also, has anybody done any battery work or battery cable work in the last 6 months?
No.
Okay.
The original owner, one owner. Like I said, this just started happening after I got back from the thing. But yeah, I'll do that. That sounds like a good point.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. If we move the negative cable to the wrong spot, if somebody disconnected the negative cable, which we would want to be on the frame, and then the frame has another big braided cable that goes to the engine because the motor sits in rubber motor mounts. If we lose one of those grounds, because the ground has to hopscotch, it has to go from the negative cable or from the negative terminal, and it has to go to the frame, the firewall, the core support, and the engine. We need all those grounds there. The core support is where the headlights are mounted and the radiator is mounted. Then we have the engine on three rubber pillows, which is motor mount, so it's not grounded. And then we've got the firewall. So we need each one of that stuff grounded. If we lose one of those grounds, especially the ground the alternator wants to look at, then we're going to have a variation of voltage. So not knowing what work was done, but
maybe it got tapped or something got hit a little bit, or
I think about that, but he didn't say anything at all about noise. Because
right.
If we damage the fan, the blower motor,
right,
and the cage, we're going to have a noise or we're going to have a vibration.
Sure.
So I paid particular attention to the fact that he didn't say he had a noise or a vibration,
right,
which would indicate that the cage is coming apart, or when you pull the blower motor out, it's got a dead rat in it.
But I'm saying if he hit one of those things that you're talking about hooked up to the...
Oh, one of the grounds.
Grounds, thank you.
Yeah. If somebody had, that's why I ask him, mm-hmm, if we're going from the negative cable, has anybody done any electrical work or any battery work?
Yeah. Could they have hit it, though, when they did the air conditioning work, anything like that?
No, but they could have left it loose.
Okay.
They could have left a ground dangle and not know where it went back, or it fell down where they didn't see it.
Sure.
But you bring up a better point. I like what you're thinking. I think you're going in the direction, you gave me this problem when you did my work.
Mm-hmm.
Would you take a look at it? Because I didn't have it before you guys did your work.
Yeah.
And then the answer is, we'll both know whose fault this is once we get it fixed.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to give you, Mr. Shop Owner, the opportunity first, because it appears, and I'm not mad at you, I love you, you did a good job on my car, but it appears that I got this when I picked my car up last.
Mm-hmm.
So if you'd take a look at it, because my intent, if you can't find it, I'll take it someplace, and then of course, if they say, oh, well, this wire didn't get reattached to this spot, mm-hmm, then I'm going to come back and politely ask you to pay that repair bill. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way around the dilemma. So, what part of town do you live in?
I've got real good mechanics, though.
So, oh, okay.
16th Street in Osborne.
Oh, okay.
I took it to Martin's.
Oh,
great. Oh, yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah, just tell him Mark Salem says that if you can't fix it, to give him a call, and either his dad, Dennis, or Mark will drive over and help that young buck fix your car.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
All right, thank you. Sam in Glendale, how are you, buddy? What can we do for you?
Oh, hi. Good morning. I've got a 65 Chevrolet El Camino, and I've got starting problems. I know some of the teeth are missing on the flex plate.
Okay.
And intermittently, when I crank it, it'll hit that spot and the starter goes, ring. So I just wait and restart. And this car just, sometimes it'll start easy, sometimes it won't. But I also have put in a little security switch where you got to flip the switch before you can start the car.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in between the neutral safety switch and then run the switch that I've got. So I have to flip it and leave it on in order to start. And then sometimes it will start cranking, and then when I try to crank it again, it's like dead when I turn the key, nothing.
Okay. I would not have used that circuit on the neutral safety switch under any conditions. I strongly suggest you put that back. I think if you want to put a kill switch in it, no one else is listening to this, but run a ground wire from the negative side of the coil and put a toggle switch and then run it to ground. And if you ground the negative side of the coil, it'll never start. It'll crank, but it won't catch. So if you're looking at some theft deterrent device, there's a lot of other ways to accomplish anybody from starting and driving your El Camino away. But
okay, now, does that switch have to be a 10-amp switch or 30-amp or
no.
Just something small?
Just something small. I mean, you know what we used to do? Don't tell anybody this, okay? We used to hook it up to a second dimmer switch on the floor. So we had two dimmer switches, one that did the headlights, but the other one was the Mark Salem auto security button. So you push the button, and it just disables the ignition system. And then when you crank it over, it just cranks and cranks and cranks. And then about 6.5 milliseconds of time, you're thinking to yourself, I probably should have pushed my theft deterrent dimmer switch. So
yeah, that might work.
And I mean, you know, there's all kinds of crazy stuff. We used to do it with the cigarette lighter. We'd take the element out of the cigarette lighter and use it for the ground. Push it in and the car would start and let go and the car would die. So in your particular case, though, the starter portion of this, we need to have 12 volts at the battery at all times, and the battery cannot drop below 9.6. If you're missing teeth on the flex plate, that flex plate stops in four positions every single time, 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 3
minutes.
O'clock, 9 o'clock. So if 3 o'clock is where the teeth are missing, then one out of four chances you have, it's going to hit there and it's going to spin. And so, but I also want you to know that there are some very specific starter numbers. The 3510 was the starter your small block Chevy should have on it. The 3510.
3510?
Yeah.
It seems like I've got a 36 something.
Okay, I don't know. I'd have to cross the numbers over because I'm going way back to the 70s. But I want you to also go to marksalem.com, and I want you to print out FAQ 28. Isn't it 28?
Oh, I don't know.
My car won't crank.
Okay.
I think it's FAQ 28.
Okay.
And here's what it does. Sometimes you said you hit the key and all you hear is the starter spin. So you're hearing the starter drive spin, but it's not engaged into the flywheel.
Right.
And there's times that we used to have to shim that 3510 away from the mating surface and put a shim between the starter and where it bolts to bring the teeth further away, because when the starter drive would go out, it would hang up in the gears. Now, if that's the case, then spraying WD-40 when it's running, spray and cover the teeth on the flywheel with WD-40. And then for the next 3 or 4 days, everything should be fine, and then the problem will come back. And if that's the case, we need to shim the starter. I'm sorry I don't have much more time. I got about 40 seconds because I have to end the show. But if you have any more information you need, mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. It's good 24 hours a day. I answer all my own emails, and if you'll give me your phone number, sometimes I want to call and ask you some questions. So if you're going to send me an email asking for some help, give me what the issue is, year, make, and model, and tell me what the problem is. God bless you. I'll see you next Saturday.